Ohtani homers, NFL draft. Happy April Fool's Day. Let's get into foul trouble.
Got me. I was not ready for that.
Good weekend. Good Easter weekend for you.
Good Easter weekend. Yeah. I mean, light on the Easter, heavy on the weekend, I would say. How was your Easter weekend, James?
Oh, I spent like half of it with you on Saturday, but you know, true. It was a good Easter weekend yesterday. Fighting a hangover, went to the play basketball at 24. Patrick, I saw a quote real hooper in the wild.
Oh wow. Yeah. Were they chucking?
No. So they were, they was playing a contentious game of 3v3 involving a 24-hour, employee who I don't know was supposed to be playing, but nice. He was.
Love that.
There's this one dude, I see him dribble into the paint. All three of the other people on the other team are converging on him. Pump fake, no one bites. Pump fake, no one bites. Shoot it over three people. Awful brick. Fast forward to 5 minutes later, and he is berating his teammates for not playing team ball.
Hey, it's all about that Mamba mentality. As long as you have the mentality, nothing
matters. Yeah, as long as you
matters.
Have the mentality, the missed field goals don't matter.
Yeah, you don't need the skills to back it up.
No, yeah.
Just look at DeJounte Murray. He put up
44 on 44.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to highlight three players from yesterday. One, the anti-DeJounte Murray, which is LeBron James, scored 40 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists on 9 of 10 three-point shooting. Luka Doncic yesterday, 47 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists.
Yeah, he had like 35 midway through the third. He was absolutely cooking yesterday.
And another guy, Nikola Jokic, 26 points, 18 rebounds, 16 assists.
When we were hanging out on Saturday and we were just playing around about what we were talking about today, and this was after the Nuggets had lost 2 games in a row, and so we were throwing out all of our like best first take headlines of like, are the Nuggets in trouble? Is it over for the run in Denver? And then they go out and basically win by 30 against the Cavs, who are generally a pretty good team.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell's playing.
Yeah.
He's got the mask on. Yeah, so we kind of came into today. We kind of were thinking maybe we're going to talk a little bit about Rockets Warriors, which is almost a weird thing for us because last week we did our awards pod, we did our All-NBA pod, but the week prior we did the pod on teams that we don't think will make the playoffs that we think have the brightest futures, and obviously we both had the Rockets in our top three, I want to say.
Yes, we did.
And since then, the Rockets basically won a million games against all bad teams except for a win against the Thunder and a win against the Clippers, but I will say the Clippers are like in their deep slump, so I don't know.
And Shea was not playing in the Thunder game.
So a little misleading their streak. They play their first good team in like 12 games, the Dallas Mavericks, the Red Hot Mavericks. They get blown out. So I guess Patrick and I decided today we're going to kind of bounce around things we're looking at for the rest of the season, things that have caught our eye recently. And Patrick, what is the first thing that's kind of caught your eye recently something you're looking forward to?
I mean, I feel like it's a good place to just go into that Rockets discussion right now. So they did have a 10-game winning streak that was broken yesterday against the Mavericks, another Texas team, and I was looking into their offensive ratings, and like it's no secret that the Rockets have really like made their bones on defense this year. They have the fourth best defensive rating of any team in the league, which is obviously super elite, but in like a very Lakers-esque way this season, in their big run over the last 2 weeks, really what has been most elite is their offensive rating. They've had the third best offensive rating over the last 2 weeks, and their defensive rating has fallen to 14th. So just smack dab in the center of the league. And really where I kind of fall on the Rockets is like, obviously they're just bursting with potential and talent and athleticism. But I don't think they're going to end up chasing down the Warriors.
I don't think so either. They're 2 games back with like 9 games left. That's tough.
The two teams play on Thursday, so obviously that is a must-win game for the Rockets. But really, it all comes down to Şengün. The Jock Landale like experience is not enough, in my opinion. They just... they have great on-ball defense around the horn, but they just don't have the rim protection necessary without Şengün, who isn't like the most elite defender, but he's super high IQ, super handsy.
Yeah, I mean, not that this is something that's repeatable, but Jacques Landale allowed a, what, 28-foot layup yesterday?
Yes, that was insane. I didn't see that.
If, for those of you who didn't see the shot, Luka Doncic attempted like a 29-foot scoop layup and actually made it over Jacques Landale from literally from the three-point line.
It was almost like...
the most ridiculous, like audacious attempt I've seen.
It's like in the older versions of 2K when you can just like lay up from anywhere on the court.
Yeah, like I'm watching it back and I'm like it's just, I've never seen that.
No, I'd never seen that before
like,
that's either.
That's the shot of the season, I feel like.
It was insane.
Sorry, to go back to the Rockets though.
But yeah, and then you get in, so Şengün, we have no idea if he's coming back at all, let alone before the potential playoffs or play-in, which I don't know about. And then the other big story about the Rockets has been Jalen Green, who has been super, super awesome over the since March 2nd, which is basically when this, they had another loss other than the Dallas game in there, but that's basically when this big winning uptick has started. He's been averaging 27 points per game. He has been averaging about 6 rebounds a game. Not a huge assist guy, 3.9. But
it's not his game.
Yeah, that's not his game. He's
cooks. A real hooper.
But plus minus, they've been 11 points better on the court. I just threw those into like 15-game sample size this season. The guys that we've seen do that are Tatum, Jokic, Irving, Shea, Embiid, Durant, Doncic, Giannis. Like, just about as elite company as you can get. What have you seen from Jalen Green?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been re-emboldened to kind of be the lead guy with Şengün out. And I think the one thing with Şengün is even though he's like younger and a bit more spry, like he is more of like a half-court player, like kind of, All right, let's get in. Let me do my baby Jokic type thing, where I feel like a lot of players on this Rockets team, like Thompson and, you know, Green himself, or even like... Jabari Smith Jr., who's also big though, but he's young, he's thinner, he kind of has that more up and down game. This Rockets team kind of can have that second identity where they can play this like really fast full court offense a lot. And I think like that fits Jalen Green's game a little bit better than like the more methodical half court offense. I guess this now is like, what does it look like when Şengün comes back? How do we meld this best version of Jalen Green with like probably the best version overall of the Rockets, which is the Şengün version? And I know people are probably thinking, like, why is the Şengün version the best version of the Rockets when they go on the 10-game win streak without him? It's because they're playing the schedule. It's kind of, We've done so many of these pods now over the course of the season where it's like, Utah has an 8-2 stretch. It's like, all right, well, let's go see who they beat. Oh, they beat the Pistons 10 times. Like, it's one of those things where it's really good to see them beat bad teams, because good teams don't drop a lot of easy, like, they don't drop the easy games too often, right? Like, there's a big hugabaloo about the Celtics losing that Hawks game, but you expand the Celtics whole, you know, schedule to the season, it's like, that's kind of like their only, what, second or third loss.
You're gonna lose
year.
A couple
you're gonna
games.
Lose a couple of those, but you just, if you can win, you know, 80-90% of those, that's what makes you a really good team. And I think next season the Rockets fans have a lot to look forward to, other than the fact that the West is still going to be the West.
Yeah, and I think the pieces are there, but it just seems like too little too late. And the Warriors haven't been playing awful. I feel like this is a good place to like step into the biggest difference between these two teams is the vibes.
Yeah.
The vibes seem terrible.
One last thing though on the Rockets though is there was that story that was reported that the Rockets offered Jalen Green and a couple firsts for Mikal Bridges, and Brooklyn turned it down. And I think now this offseason, I'm sure they're thinking to keep Jalen Green. The guy's not even 22 years old yet. But if you maybe are enticed with some crazy trade package.
Yeah, I mean, I think why not?
Yeah, why not? I mean, because this guy could be so good. It's just, I think that's the one thing you highlighted earlier is like, man, for how much he's going to be handling the ball, like that assist percentage is bad.
Yeah.
Like, well, he's got to pass the ball more.
It makes it tough because it's like, okay, we have like this 15-game sample size of him like leading us to victories against all the teams that we're supposed to beat. But that sample size is in March. And who knows? You know, it's an 82-game season where the vast majority, we were low-key a little bit disappointed in what Jalen Green had been so far. And now it's like his contract, like he can be extended this offseason. I doubt they're going to do that because it's like, do you want to – I feel like if he got the extension this offseason, it would have to be that baby max. And I'm not paying him the baby max right now. If he's able to do it again next season, I would be okay with that. But it's just, it's kind of a sliding doors moment over the next like year and a half for the Rockets of like, is Jalen Green that guy that we want to really invest in?
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough because I think there is always going to be a little bit of a question with Şengün as your number one guy. I just think why I'm a little, like, I love Şengün, but I'm a little bit lower on him being the absolute fulcrum of a championship team because he's not that full, like, 7-foot heavy set center. He's a little bit more light on his feet. He's a little less, you know, dominating than like an Embiid or a Jokic is. But yeah, let's get to the Warriors, which is kind of funny. Something I'm going to talk about after this is post-trade deadline records where the Warriors are actually pretty good, but you were right. The vibes could not be worse.
We had the whole Draymond finally making his return to the ejection jail.
Oh, he should have gotten ejected and suspended for what he did to Patty Mills against the Heat. I don't understand how he's playing. I don't even understand how the opportunity to play in the game he got ejected.
I mean the Patty Mills
was awful.
Was violent.
Yeah, like how is he? I feel like that should have been like a multi-game suspension.
But then you get to the next game and he's just screaming in the ref's face less than 10 minutes into the game, which is like classic Draymond stuff, but he passed the point. I don't know what he said, but he passed the point of no return and got thrown out of that game. And then we see Steph just like really in a mode that we don't see Steph a lot of, just completely like, fuck, like that's my guy. And the kind of like dirty little secret of it all is like when Draymond has been playing earlier in the season, the stats were not like favorable to Draymond. But lately, when Draymond has been playing, the Warriors have been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't know. This Warriors team, it's just like, I feel like even when they're playing well, there's just, what it is I feel like they don't have enough play finishers on this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you have Kuminga, who's like your play finisher.
And he's been out recently.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it is tough because I feel like this team is almost like, you know, we talk so much about spacing in terms of, and I think people think of spacing solely as your ability to spread the floor from the outside, but you got to remember gravity is, you know, in all directions. Like a crazy rim running big has gravity going toward the rim. It sucks defenders in toward the rim to open up space for the shooters on the outside. And I think you're right. A big part of this team is lacking is like they don't have any inside gravity.
Yeah.
And so they have space, you know, spread around the court, but they don't have space for those shooters to get a lot of shots off. I think Klay is still like, you know, obviously Klay was pretty freaking bad in the first half of the season. He's been better, but like still he's just not that upper echelon guy. It's kind of like if you're going to equate salary cap spending per player to like their quality of play, there's like a big mismatch with Klay and Wiggins.
Oh, totally.
To their level of play. And I mean, I will say, so since the trade deadline, the Warriors are 17-9. So they've actually been one of the best teams post trade deadline. They are 10th in offense and 11th in defense, so they're good.
That's hypothetically contender status.
They're a good team. I think it's what you're going back to. They don't have to play finishing. The weird like Klay and Draymond really not being able to take a proper grip on like their falling status as basketball players is kind of I don't know. It's like one of those things where it's like you don't like to comment on the mental aspect because we're not in the locker room. We don't know, but seems like it's out there on the court. You can kind of see it.
Well, I push back on that just a little bit of like, really, the Draymond status on this team, they're asking him to do the same exact stuff. And I think more or less he's able to like physically do it. But yeah, to your point, the mental,
I think what's
concentration
hard,
exact, is not I, there.
It's one of those things because we're not in their locker room, so this could be all speculation, but it's like I feel like it's one of those things where if you're a Moody, right, and you're kind of just getting benched randomly at times. It feels like, you know, your minutes feel really inconsistent. You're your Kuminga too. Remember in the beginning of the season, we had this whole like Kuminga Moody discourse, and you're like, I keep getting benched for no reason, and this guy's getting ejected 5 minutes into a game, and last year he punched, you know, a guy who played amazing in the finals for us, and you're kind of like, why do I have the shortest leash in the world, and this guy is allowed to do whatever the heck he wants?
Yeah,
and especially when you're seeing, you know, Clay get benched in these fourth quarters, so it's not like there's just this unwritten rule that the big three has to always be on the court. It's kind of like this weird, like, I don't know. I feel like if I was on their team, that would be kind of hard to get over.
Yeah, not only that, but the coach who's making all these decisions gets a long, like the richest extension of any coach in the league midway through the season, when it seems like the locker room is just consistently all over the fucking place.
Yeah, and I it's kind of weird. The Steph Curry leadership discord stuff, I don't really want to get into because I just think it's kind of dumb. But like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Golden State, because they do have a 2-game lead over the Rockets, there's not really enough games left for the Rockets to really make that up unless they keep up this crazy hot streak and the Warriors kind of really fall apart. So the Warriors are 40-34. The Rockets are 38-36. So just a clean 2 games back. The Warriors currently have the tiebreaker. I feel like the Warriors are kind of destined for 10 because similarly, I don't think they're going to catch the Lakers at 9.
Yeah, so right now, Basketball Reference gives the Warriors a 55% chance to snag that 10 seed and the Rockets an 8% chance to get the 10 seed. So the stats really, like, bear it out. Also, the Warriors have a pretty light schedule going forward. With that being said, they were about this close to losing to the Spurs yesterday. A Draymond box out away from losing, which that was a really great box out on Victor Wembanyama, but like to be in that position is not great. But yeah, I mean, the other thing I just want to highlight is like the story about the Warriors all last season was like they were kind of under delivering on who they had and what we thought of as the Warriors, but kind of the shining star in the distance for that team was that death lineup that they had all season. That was one of the best 5-man lineups in the league, net rating wise. And they still have like a lineup that is in the 85th percentile of all 5-man lineups in Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Kuminga, and Draymond Green. It's 92 in the 92nd percentile defensively, which if you can have a lineup that elite defensively and Steph Curry on the court at the same time, all of Steph Curry's playoff triumphs have taught us that that can really like carry you far in the playoffs. So there's at least that little thing, but
I think the only worry though is that that lineup is really good across this regular season sample size, but what does that lineup look like when the other team has Gobert, Naz Reid, that pairing? True. What does that lineup that's look true. Like when it's LeBron and Davis at the 4-5 for the other team? I think that's what's scary for the Warriors. It's like that lineup is great for regular season play. I don't know how good that lineup is against these giant Western teams.
Yeah, yeah, no, I hear you on that. And it's not the smallest lineup of small lineups that you can roll out there. Obviously, Draymond plays way bigger than his size. Kuminga is just a beast athletically, so it's a little bit more of a bear, but I totally hear you.
Yeah.
That's tough. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're both landing on just like the Warriors are the better team right now. If the Rockets could have started this run
earlier,
2 weeks earlier, and they had Şengün, and they were able to figure that out in a little bit more of a real way, maybe this would be more of a conversation. But hey, a lot of shit can happen over these last 8 games. You know?
One small thing on the Warriors, because they're kind of a team I feel like that's kind of been one of these teams we're talking about throughout the season. But when they were like kind of really drifting, it was one thing we highlighted is that their strength of schedule to start the year was just brutal. And now we're seeing them win. And it's just one of those things where I feel like next season we need to, I don't know, Patrick, maybe we need to go to Vegas like halfway and just make some over-under bets on the strength of schedule, because it's the same thing we've been talking about all season with all these teams. When they streak, it's almost always like, who did they play? And when they falter, it's like, who did they play? And it's almost always just like, wow, when teams play other good teams, it's harder to win a ton of games in a row. And when they play a lot of bad teams, they can win a lot in a row.
Yeah. It does pretty much come down to that a lot of the time. The teams are more or less what we thought they were.
Yep. Okay. I wanted to talk about the post-trade deadline best teams.
Okay.
Because last year, the Lakers obviously made a flurry of moves at the trade deadline, and they go on to just be like this super dominant team, and they go all the way to the Western Conference Finals. So I decided to look back at last year's post-trade deadline standings to see, like, is there a correlation more with post-trade deadline success or season-long success? And what I found, unsurprisingly, was the teams that were good all season were also pretty good post-trade deadline. So this year, though, the best team post-trade deadline, no surprise, the Boston Celtics, 19 wins, 4 losses, number 1 in offense, number 7 in defense.
2 of those losses against your Atlanta Hawks.
Yes. Don't worry, Celtics fans, it's okay. I feel like the thing with the Celtics, they've wrapped up the number 1 seed like a week or two ago. So they honestly are kind of in...
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't care if the Celtics don't win another game this regular season. I'm not going to take any of that into account.
I'm right there with you. I was totally kidding. I interrupted you.
Yeah.
Keep going.
But yeah, unless there's an injury to the Celtics, nothing that happens to them the rest of the regular season we care about. Okay. Second best team, the Dallas Mavericks. 17 wins, 6 losses. Second in offense, 8th in defense. So they're literally just a mirror of the Celtics. Which is crazy because their defense is basically the exact same. They're both allowing 112 points per 100 possessions. The Celtics have an outlandish 128 per 100 possessions scoring rate. The Mavericks are number 2. Patrick, the Mavericks are 7 points behind that.
Yeah.
So, but that's crazy. The Mavericks and the Celtics. So obviously the Mavs are a team we've been talking about a lot recently. Third, the Timberwolves, 16-7. The Magic, we talked about them having a really easy schedule, 16-7. Denver, of course, 17-7. New Orleans, another team we've been talking about streaking, 15-8. Oklahoma City, 17-6. So right up there with the Mavs, but their statistical indicator is not quite as strong. Here's where it gets fun, Patrick. The Miami Heat.
Ooh, I would not have guessed that they were there that high.
13-9. They
What ranking is that?
They are, well, by net rating, they are 8th.
After the trade deadline.
13-9 is not that crazy, to be honest. But they're up to 19th in offense, so still pretty bad. But they're up to 3rd in defense.
There we go.
So maybe something to look for as the Heat are kind of coming around. But the team I wanted to talk about, where their net rating isn't the craziest, but the Lakers, 15-8. Actually, that's 16-8. These are not up to date. They beat the Nets last night. 16-8, that's really good. They're 3rd in offense during that time. 23rd in defense, which is obviously pretty bad.
Yeah.
But
it's insane that that's even possible.
They're the only team. They're the only team amongst these 13 teams that have been pretty good post-trade deadline that have a bad defense.
Mm-hmm.
But 3rd in offense, and like, if there's any of these teams that has a pathway to go from 23rd to defense to like 8th in defense overnight, I mean, it's that team. Like, I don't know. Are we kind of looking at Lakers get an OKC matchup? All of a sudden, they're kind of getting ready for a Western Conference Finals run again? Because I don't know. I kind of like them. I've kind of liked them all season, but like, I feel like they're finally really putting it together here.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers have definitely put it together on offense since the trade deadline. There's like absolutely no questioning that. The stats bear it out. I think one thing to your point earlier with strength of schedule, when we were looking at strength of schedule in the first half of the season, the Lakers were one of those teams that, especially post the in-season tournament, had one of the more difficult strength of schedules up until the trade deadline. And so that's layered out a little bit, but this is a Western Conference team. There's a reason why we see so many Eastern Conference teams higher in this ranking of best records since the trade deadline, because when you're only playing Eastern Conference teams, it's a lot easier to win. I mean, I fall in the same place that I really have with the Lakers all season of like, I don't see them as a regular season threat, but they have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And I mean, you can't completely count them out, but I mean the West is just like absolutely killer, and We have still seen LeBron James and Anthony Davis be virtually healthy all year long, which is definitely not what we've come to expect from this Lakers team. So that's something that's super like promising, but also something that would make me a little bit nervous to be like, when does the shoe drop?
Yeah, I mean, they're just such a weird team, right? They have an at Boston win with no AD and LeBron. They have an at Milwaukee win with no LeBron. But like they're this weird team. Like, they can't beat the Kings ever. They just can't even be competitive versus the Kings, but they can beat almost all of the really good teams aside from Denver. But like, I think if they get that 8 or even that 7, like, I don't know. If I'm OKC, I'm like, please just don't let it be the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm OKC, I wouldn't want the Lakers, especially from the other teams that are like involved. But if you had the chance to like tank away from a potential Lakers matchup as the Thunder, would you?
That's tough because you don't want the Nuggets to have home court. If you're assuming you want to go all the way, right? So yeah, I think you have to, you can't be afraid of any teams if your real aspiration is winning the championship. But, I mean, last year's champions, the Nuggets, have kind of been doing this for a long time now, where at the end of the season, they seem to just coincidentally bench people to get the matchup they want in the first round. It's kind of what Denver's been sneakily doing for like 3 seasons, which is funny because I feel like if another team did that, Mike Malone would throw a conniption.
Michael
Malone, sorry.
No, I'm totally kidding. Yeah, I mean, I just am like, the Thunder have been so good all season. You just, like, I would still pick them in that matchup. I 100% would. But, yeah, it'd be scary. Like, I don't ever want to face LeBron James. And he's like, you know, freaking 18-1 in first round matchups all time.
Yeah. I think the other thing, the other team, I mean, we've just talked about them so much, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the Mavericks have just been so freaking good since they made those trades, because like 48 minutes of having a competent center has like completely changed this team. Kyrie Irving is on an absolute tear.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that I think is not getting enough play in the media, because it's so easy, especially with the style that Luka plays, to be like Luka is carrying this
team. And Kyrie, yeah.
But like, Kyrie has been absolutely incredible, especially in the clutch this season. Like, that guy just, he cannot miss at certain points.
Yeah, like, I had my, you know, when we did our trade deadline bold proclamations, I said the Mavs are getting the 6th seed. They're up to the 5th seed now. And honestly, if the Clippers can kind of keep slumping, we might be looking at the Mavs as the 4th seed. It's the same difficulty for the Rockets to jump the Warriors, but, like, Mavs are, like, the hottest team in the league, and the Clippers are like kind of slumping.
Yeah, right now it's giving it the Clippers have a 70% chance to stay in that 4 seed, and then actually Basketball Reference gives the Pelicans a 21% chance and the Mavs a 6% chance to get that 4 seed. But like, it's so tight, there's so few games left that it's going to oscillate greatly depending on the day. But I mean, yeah, you can't say enough about what the Mavericks have shown, especially after like they had that like 3-game win streak right after the trade deadline, and then they lost like 3 or 4 games in a row, and there was a lot of question marks popping up. And I think a lot of teams, especially in the West, once you have those question marks, things kind of start to dissolve, and they just completely put on their big girl boots and started stomping through the West after that point. So, I mean, it's definitely the perfect time to get hot. It gives me vibes of like kind of a second run LeBron in Cleveland of like, there would always be chocked full of drama throughout the season. And there would always be some kind of question of like, do the Cavs have enough? What are they doing? Seems like they're not really taking things seriously. And then the last couple of weeks before the season, LeBron would really like
ratchet
kick
up
into gear. By the end of the season, people would be like, why aren't we giving LeBron the MVP? And then LeBron would do his thing. And those are the kind of vibes I'm getting from Luka right now, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. We just did our MVP pod. I had Luka second. I think he's going to make a real run at it. I still think Jokic should be the MVP, but it's been a really fun, like, it's been a fun season. Like, I guess my one other thing I'm kind of looking up to is I believe the Timberwolves are 2-1 versus the Nuggets. They just beat them, and they have another game against them. And I'm kind of like, is this the Nuggets kryptonite team? Because the Nuggets did say last year they were the toughest team they played in the playoffs. You know, they're bigger, they're physical. I feel like of all these Western teams, they're probably the best at kind of containing just the raw physicality of Denver's front line. So I kind of want to see, like, are they going to 3-1 the Nuggets or are they going to 2-2 the Nuggets?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That. I guess the lucky thing for the Nuggets and the Timberwolves is, like, if they see each other, they're not going to see each other until at least a little bit further down in the playoffs. And with the West, there's just nothing guaranteed. Like, off rip, it's going to be just behemoths going at each other.
So the Wolves have 8 games left. Oh man, this is a tough stretch for the Wolves. They've got the Rockets tomorrow.
Yeah.
The Suns, the Lakers, the Nuggets, and the Suns again. And the Nuggets. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Nuggets once.
Yeah.
Dang, 2 Suns, Lakers, Nuggets, and Rockets.
Yeah.
That's a brutal, like,
coming off an L to the Bulls yesterday.
That was tough.
We needed to fucking win that game.
You needed that one.
Dude, DeMar DeRozan was just in his bag. Caruso hit like 6 threes.
I think Gobert pissed him off. That was not wise.
Well, did you see in the beginning of the game, I forget who it was, but somebody elbowed Gobert right in the ribs.
It was Caruso.
Was it Caruso? Yeah. Okay, yeah. And Gobert, like, literally pulled up his shirt and was like, I still have a bruise on my rib. Like, he was showing them, like, the medical tape on his ribs. It was really funny. But, yeah, it was a tough L.
Oh, yeah. This is a fun stretch for the T-Wolves. I guess it's one of those weird things, though, like that Suns game. I feel like Phoenix is going to be like going all out, trying to make the play-in, and Timberwolves might not. I mean, that's a good thing. They might not be playing their guys.
Yeah, you would think the Suns would go for it. But I feel like the Suns, you know, this is kind of the next place that I want to talk. The old lions of the league, the teams and the star players that we have seen dominate for like pretty much the last 10 years, not including Jason Tatum and Nikola Jokic, but the Kevin Durants of the world, the LeBron Jameses of the world, the Steph Currys of the world, the Jimmy Butlers. Why can none of them seem to get up for games on a day-to-day basis, even at this advanced point in the season? That's what's kind of driving me insane right now.
Well, I don't know if it's fair to lump LeBron with these guys right now.
Hey, I mean, they're still in 9th place, man.
They are, but they've been playing. Well, he's been playing spectacularly.
He has been. But it's been a mixed bag from the Lakers.
Yeah.
The Warriors.
I mean, it's tough. I guess when it's tough when you're older, I don't know if you watched LeBron. They asked him, like, you know, or JJ asked him, like, can you get up for every single game at your age? And he was like, you know, I can try, but it's kind of hard at this point. But I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Let's throw the Clippers in there.
Yeah.
The Clippers have been absolutely falling apart. And it's not from lack of talent on these rosters. All these rosters are chock full of talent. But I just feel, any given game, any of these teams just can give us a dud. And it's like one dud every 5 games.
Yeah, no, it is wild. I do think it's just kind of crazy that, like, LeBron, I feel like, is still playing at a higher level than all those guys. And it's like they're all so much younger than him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, LeBron was going to
Steph's, like,
Davidson March Madness runs.
I know, like, I feel like, not to go on this, like, LeBron fanboyism, but I feel like it's kind of crazy because I feel like when LeBron is, like, hitting all these milestones and records, everyone's like, well, modern technology, you know, more guys are going to start doing this. And it's like, no one else is doing this. Literally nobody else is doing this.
Yeah, I mean, look at Chris Paul's the closest thing to what we have seen.
And he's an all-time point guard, one of the best who's ever played the sport.
And he's not even close
to
on the same level of what LeBron is doing right now. And, I mean, Chris Paul did not start on the third base that LeBron did from a gene pool standpoint. But he does have the supercomputer brain as well.
Your Suns, they're the 8th seed right now. They're tied with the Kings record-wise, but I guess they don't have the tiebreaker because the Kings are 7 with the same record of 43-31. And I think it's just the West, man. 43-31 is a good record.
Yeah.
I mean, the Suns have dropped a lot of questionable games.
Would be the 5 seed in the East right now.
Yeah. Which we'd be talking about them in a totally different way if that one number on the side of the, on the left side was different, even though the number on the right side is the same. But I don't know. I mean, yeah
Phoenix, I mean, we want to talk about the Suns for a second. I'm down to talk about the Suns for a second.
Gail Goodrich.
I wish we had Gail Goodrich right now. Gail Goodrich would bring it. But so right now, the Suns, net rating wise, are sitting at ninth best offense and the 13th best defense, which I would assume people that don't watch the Suns are amazed by the fact that they have the 13th best defensive net rating in the league right now.
12th post-trade deadline.
There we go. Even better post-trade deadline.
But a little bit worse
the likes
offense.
Of Royce O'Neal. But all of that is in spite of literally the worst, I've talked about it many times, the worst fourth quarter net rating of all time since NBA.com started logging fourth quarter net rating. So they are doing so well in the first three quarters that they are just completely outbalancing this like apocalypse event that happens in every single fourth quarter.
Just a note for the listeners, I have to turn down Patrick's microphone whenever he starts talking about the Suns.
It's just...
Sorry, please continue.
I feel like even if I yell, I am not heard. Because, I mean, in just the last week, we see them pick up this win against, I will say, a Jamal Murray-less Denver Nuggets team. But they had Jokic. The Suns, they brought back Nurkic, but after a sprained ankle, he's not in like his normal playing shape. And then they drop the very next game a completely non-competitive matchup against the Thunder. I'm to the point where like regardless of the series, if you pick the Suns to win a first round series, you are just like, you're on some kind of drugs that I need, but I can't even get there at this point. And that is like, Book has been incredible this season. KD has been healthy all season long. Bradley Beal is playing the best basketball of his season right now. And still, they just cannot just get there every game. It just seems you turn on the game and you just know like, oh, they're just like not feeling it today. They're just like,
do they like each other? What's the vibe?
I mean, Devin and Kevin are like all over each other.
I've seen that before. I've seen that before with
they
Kevin.
They're never spotted away from each other off outside of like games. They're just all, they just can't be stopped. And then, I mean, Bradley Beal, I will say he says very, like, honest post-game things. He's like, if there's one guy on the Suns that's like, yeah, we fucking suck tonight, that's Bradley Beal. And he will just say that, which I really appreciate. I think, I mean, and like, I'm really just like watching the game, so who knows? Like James said, we're not in the locker room. But I don't think Frank Vogel has their ear. And it's been effective from a defensive perspective. I think it's a lot, the results have been a lot better than what a lot of people expected going into the season. But literally, you think about the Suns, every question mark that people had, except for health, which hasn't been as bad as people make it out to be, the Suns have won. People were questioning about Nurkic. He's been incredible this season. People were questioning about their bench. Really, they've been like Bol Bol worked out. They got Royce O'Neal. Grayson Allen has been the best shooter in the fucking league this year. That all worked out. Everything worked out, except there's no, some voodoo magic is over the Suns that they just can't break through.
I really think it's just like Booker and Durant really live off contested mid-range jump shots. Like at the end of the day, like those shots go in a lot more in the first three quarters, and then when you get your tired legs and the other team really ratchets up the defense, like those shots just get really hard. And like, this is something I flagged with Durant, but this is actually the first year where his rim attempts were starting to go back up. But it's just, he's become way too reliant on his mid-range jump shot. And I know it's like people like praise Durant for the shot making, but it's not a good shot.
Like, yeah,
it's just not a good shot. I don't really care how efficiently he shoots it in the regular season. It's just never translating when we get to the playoffs. I think, I don't know. It's the Durant discourse is always weird to me because like he's always just praised as being this just unbelievable scorer, but it's like the actual diversity of the shot making is so limited sometimes.
I mean, we got to remember the part of Durant's career that he's in right
now.
Yeah,
he's really old.
Like, we were talking about LeBron earlier. Like, what KD is doing right now
is incredible. Is
just one notch below on, like, the impressiveness, like, age and skill graph.
He is in the GOAT combo.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
I think this season took him out of the GOAT combo. But can
nothing
we talk about
you do in your age 35 year can get you out of the GOAT convo.
Can we talk about Patrick being in what is this, like, stage two of being a Durant fan, or stage three? Like, what's the what is it, like, joy?
Oh, like the steps of like processing grief.
Yeah. Yeah, like, because he's like, you know, Devin and Kevin are buddies. I kind of remember when Kyrie and Kevin were buddies.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of remember when Russ and Kevin were buddies.
But, you know, the difference between Kyrie and Book is Book's never going to choose not to play for any political reasons.
Mm. Do you think KD is just like a, I hate to use this word, but like a star fucker?
A groupie?
A groupie.
Ooh.
Like, he just latches on to a bright young
star,
yeah. Or like a really talented player, and is like, we're best friends, and then hopes that, because like that's essentially what he did in Golden State, I guess, if you want to be a hater.
I feel like also the Durant Booker fit is like this, like, it's a good fit because they can both shoot, but it's also a weird fit because they're so redundant as players. Like, they do the same shot diet.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if the team is still moving and there's still off-ball movement, it's like, you couldn't imagine anything better because they do willingly take threes. They can shoot from all over. They can attack closeouts. They can bring it to the rim at pretty good clips if they're doing it, but once you get to the fourth quarter, it's just iso ball, and yeah, they stop all the off ball movement. Even Grayson Allen's just standing there. If Eric Gordon's on the floor, he's just standing there, and it completely congests it. But like, come on, these guys are both three level scorers. We're not talking about like a Russell Westbrook,
no.
Truly like one dimensional, even like a, you know, like a Ja Morant or a DeMar DeRozan, who is really only going to shoot in the mid-range. These guys take a lot of mid-range shots, but they will take what the defense gives them.
True. Although, I don't know, I might push back. I think they'd be better off if you replaced one of them with Ja.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right now?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. One more thing before we get to, do you have anything else? I have one small thing I want to get to.
Not really.
So I love watching the Denver Nuggets. They're a joy to watch. One guy who I really like on this team is Peyton Watson.
Yeah.
This guy has like some freakishly acrobatic finishes at the rim. He's like, I feel like every time I watch a Nuggets game, he's starting to get more and more of that like Aaron Gordon like chemistry with Jokic, where it's like Jokic always knows where this guy's going. And like, 21 years old, is this like the next Denver Nuggets like role player diamond in the rough? It seems like, you know, the Heat always have their like, oh, we just picked some random dude off the street and now he's going to hit 5 threes in a game. I feel like the Nuggets are kind of like every year there's like some new Nuggets role player who just is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think Peyton Watson, like, hypothetically, is exactly what they needed to be even more dominant last year. They didn't really have a guy to put on, like, the Devin Bookers and the Anthony Edwards of the world last year. And Peyton Watson is kind of the ideal build for that. Super long arms, pretty solid, very athletic. I do have some quibbles with Peyton Watson's decision making at times. It's not always the greatest, but luckily he is not a starter for them and will not have to be, knock on wood, a starter for them. But yeah, I mean, Peyton Watson could be the difference.
Could be the Bruce Brown
in a championship for them this year. Absolutely.
Do you want to get to best take, worst take?
Let's get to best take, worst take.
Okay. Well, I guess, geez, I'm just slobbing on the knob today. I've got best take, LeBron James.
Wow. Wow.
I've just gloated about this guy all podcast. But no, I don't, not a specific quote, but on the JJ Redick LeBron Mind the Game pod, LeBron talked about how this bag talk is really, really stupid. How like, oh, he has a big bag is just like this like glorified thing. And it is kind of amazing to me, like, because we've obviously had the worst take about like real hoopers know Kyrie's better than Luka. And it's like Kyrie maybe is the most skilled player in the league right now, but there's a reason why he's not the best player in the world. Because like having the most skills often leads to bad shot attempts. Not in Kyrie's case, but with a lot of these hyper-skilled guys.
No, Kyrie takes some bad shots. He just makes a lot of them.
Yeah, well, I feel like Kyrie's shot selection is pretty good. I don't know.
I mean, he's a chucker. He's a very efficient chucker. But
I agree to disagree. But yeah, I just agree with that. And LeBron also talked about how a lot of guys start getting double teamed. They're like, why are you double teaming me? It's like, dude, it's the NBA. Like, it kind of amazes me because you can just see it a lot of the times, like how so many great scorers just really can't read a double team very well. And that includes my guy, Joel Embiid. It took him forever to be decent at reading a double team.
Speaking of Joel Embiid, we haven't even talked about how he's coming back this week.
Supposedly.
Are you so excited? They announced this morning.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. I think he's coming back on the... Oh, this is not... This is a screenshot of my Twitter app. This is not actual Twitter. I was like pressing the button so hard and it's like, this is not working. Possibly Tuesday in Philadelphia versus OKC. That is the big report from Shams just about an hour ago.
The re-debut against the team he had his initial debut against. It's very poetic. This is how the Celtics upset begins.
Very full circle.
Okay, that's awesome news.
Taking care of your health isn't easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last year, I've been drinking AG1 every single day, no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel strong and ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. AG1 has been really helpful for me because lately I've been on a lower calorie, super high protein diet and I need to still get my vitamins and minerals, and AG1 makes that really, really easy for me. I just take it every day in the morning and my whole day is just ahead of me and I feel great throughout the day. If there's one product I'd recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/foultrouble. That's drinkag1.com/foultrouble. Check it out.
Fucking love Joel Embiid, as everyone knows. What is your best take?
My best take is going to Ice Cube for offering Caitlin Clark a $5 million contract to join the Big Three. It's like, just, this is all from like a marketing perspective, but what bet? I didn't even realize that the Big Three was really still going on.
No, I didn't either.
But wow, like, if this is, like, I assume it's a real offer. And, like, so the whole story behind it is, like, the max rookie contract in the WNBA is $76,000 a year. And Ice Cube is offering Caitlin Clark $5 million. And I know Caitlin Clark, I'm sure she's doing fine. I'm sure she does. I saw, like, her NIL value is somewhere around $3 million, so she's making a good amount of money right now.
She's got a Gatorade partnership going on.
She's in State Farm commercials now. Yeah. Like,
she's playing LSU today.
She's playing LSU today.
Huge game.
Must watch TV.
Legacy game.
Yeah. It's true. But it's just like, yeah, go do it. Like, I want to see her in the Big Three. I would love. And, of course, she has a lot to lose if it's not a good showing, but I like the roll of the dice.
I thought it was funny. I don't want to see her in the Big Three. I just don't want the whole, like, see, women can't play sports discourse when she can't guard Joe Johnson.
Yeah.
Like, come on. No one can fucking guard Joe Johnson. That dude was awesome.
Yeah.
He made Paul Pierce fall to the ground. That's still my favorite crossover of all time, that one. Do you remember that one where he's dribbling it, like, so low and Pierce just reaches and falls?
ISO Joe. That's a real hooper right there.
Yeah, ISO Joe is... I think ISO Joe is the realest hooper who's ever hooped.
Yeah. He's
like still playing, loving the game. Liquid hoop. Nice guy.
Concentrate.
Yeah. He was always one of those dudes where it was like, Basketball Hall of Fame sucks. If someone like Joe Johnson's going to make it. I'm like, okay, granted, in other sports, he's probably not a Hall of Famer, but Joe Johnson was fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I love Joe Johnson. All right.
Also, just a lot of bad luck. throughout Joe Johnson's career. Like, oh, Suns legend. If only he didn't break his eye, he probably would have a championship ring on his finger.
My worst take, Michael Beasley.
Oh.
He said he would average 25 points on 10 shots in today's NBA. So to average 25 points on 10 shots, obviously I'm assuming there'd be some free throws mixed in, but you would literally have to go like 9 of 10 every game with like multiple threes.
It's like the easiest thing to say for like ex-NBA players of like, oh, nowadays, yeah, I'd average like 15 blocks a game.
But also like you played on the big three Heat where if your name wasn't LeBron James, Chris Bosh, or Dwayne Wade, every shot you took was wide open.
No, I don't think he even played on the big three Heat. Wasn't he traded away to clear cap space?
I think he came back to play for... Let me double check. I'm pretty sure he played 1 year with us.
I am... See, the reason why I'm so sure is because after the big three Heat was assembled,
He played on the big three
Heat. The Timberwolves. Okay.
He did. So he had Miami, traded to Minnesota, a brief stint with the Suns, and then he came back to the Heat where he... Okay, he shot 50% from the floor, 39% from three. So this is a really efficient scorer, especially in that era. But again, I've never seen players more wide open than the role players on those Heat teams. Like Ray Allen would have like 30 feet of space sometimes.
Like, well, let me tell you, Michael Beasley was our big Amari Stoudemire and Steve Nash replacement. And he had carte blanche. He could do whatever he wanted, and he was fucking awful.
Yeah, he shot 40% that season. So he had a jump of about 10% of his field goal shooting.
And that was what year?
That was 2012, 2013.
Okay, and that was so 10 plus years ago? And he thinks he still is like...
Yeah, so for perspective, the most points he's ever averaged was 19. That second Minnesota year where he took 17 a game. So
he played for all our favorite teams.
Yeah, he's the official foul trouble MVP. No, I don't want to dump on Beasley, but 25 points on 10 shots mathematically is almost impossible.
Yeah, no one's doing that. No, literally no one is doing that ever. No one has done that. No one would do that. That's a terrible take. My worst take of the week goes to Nick Wright, who said the Lakers should want Denver in round one. No, they shouldn't.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a bad take.
No, they shouldn't. They should hope that Denver loses to some other team in round one. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
You know what I love about, you know what I do love about Denver is, like, I feel like we talked earlier about, like, you know, if OKC really wants to win the championship, they just got to get that one seed and welcome the Lakers. Denver has flagrantly tried their hardest to avoid teams they don't think they match up with well. And I saw an interview with Michael Porter last year where they were like, what were your thoughts when the Heat were playing the Celtics? And he literally was like, we were really hoping the Heat were going to win because we just thought we were going to beat them. And like the Celtics, like he was just like, why would I want to play the better team?
Yeah. It's
like, and I'm like, you know what? I think that's why people hate the Nuggets low key is they're just like the antithesis
who
of like
hates the Nuggets.
Well, just like real hoopers hate the Nuggets because they're like kind of the antithesis of like, I'm the macho man, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, they're smart. That's why they're the champions.
Gilbert Arenas hates the Nuggets.
Yeah, okay.
Real Hoopers Arenas, hate the Nuggets.
Real Hoopers hate the Nuggets. Well, I wouldn't know
us
about
false
that.
Prophets love them.
Yeah, I mean, you just like look at every single freaking year in every single sports. You know who, in every single professional sports league anywhere, you know who usually wins in the first round? The number one seed. And the number two seed. There's exceptions. Yeah, sure. But like probably 98% of the time, the one and two seeds win, especially when they're like reigning champions. Like just, I get it, Nick Wright. You're like, oh, the Lakers want to catch him early while they for sure have LeBron James and Anthony Davis still healthy. And the Nuggets won't be in the groove of playoff basketball quite yet. Like, shut up. You don't want to play the Nuggets at all. Those are the big boys on the block. You want to skirt past through a freaking alley, jump in a dumpster, wait for Jokic to walk by, jump out of the dumpster, and go to the second round.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious, Max, if you guys beat them by 10 points again in this upcoming game.
Yeah.
And you're 3-1, would they still be the team as a Timberwolves fan that you'd want to avoid the most?
Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 That's, I'm
no question.
No one should ever want to play this Nuggets team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Done. Like the Celtics are probably every day just like, please lose.
Yeah.
Please
yeah. Oh lose. My God. Yeah. The like, Celtics can't want that.
The only reason that we beat them the other night is because Jokic wasn't really playing too well. Like, and that's what it comes down to. And in the playoffs, he likes to play very well.
And he's going to play like 48 minutes a game.
He's not sitting down. So.
Oh, man.
And they have Peyton Watson now.
Dude.
Okay. So worst take of the week, Michael Beasley or Nick Wright?
It's hard because like Michael Beasley is certifiably insane.
So we have just a horrible take from Beasley, but one we've kind of heard before.
Yeah.
We've heard the old head boasting. I mean, that's quite a stretch. The 10 shots.
Yeah. 10 shots is quite a,
I'll give him a little pass. A he probably didn't do the math in his head.
No, he was just, talking. He doesn't have a podcast and he was on a podcast.
Yeah. He wasn't ready. He wasn't ready. He didn't bring his notes like we do.
Exactly.
Nick Wright's is just flagrantly stupid.
It's just terrible. And I don't think we've given Nick Wright a worst take of the week. Yet, so Nick Wright?
Yeah, I'm gonna give Nick Wright the worst take
Let's
of the
go.
Week.
Let's go.
Congratulations, Nick Wright. I feel like of the obnoxious talking sports heads, Nick Wright is usually the ironically the most right of
them. This week he's Nick Wrong.
Yeah, I guess. I do like Nick Wright, but some of his like LeBron homerism
is bad.
A bit much. And coming from someone who likes LeBron generally, I really gravitated towards him in the few final years of Cleveland LeBron run. But
I think it's like what's funny too about like the LeBron discourse is like I feel like so many LeBron fans are like, especially when the Lakers won the bubble title, like Jordan wasn't doing this at this age. And it's like Jordan literally won the championship at that same age.
Yeah.
It's like as dumb as the Jordan over LeBron arguments tend to be, some of the like new LeBron over Jordan arguments are also just like incredibly stupid too.
I can't remember. I think it was Rachel Nichols. Somebody said this week that if the Lakers win a title this year, LeBron, it ends the GOAT debate forever. Like, one, the GOAT debate will never end just because what's easier to talk about?
There's always
going to
be a GOAT debate.
But also, he would still only have 5 championships. That the whole kind of premise of the Jordan
argument
starts at 6 championships.
Yeah, I feel like the only way LeBron could, quote, be undisputed, which it'll never be undisputed, is if he were to win 2 championships and then retire.
Yeah. Yeah, if he did, like, if he won back-to-back before he retired, that would be insane.
Yeah.
I mean, an 8 run to a championship would be quite the, like, new trophy in the mantle for LeBron. But, yeah, I really don't think he could do anything to, like, end.
Do you
like,
think if they beat the Celtics in the finals this year, he retires?
That was one of my takes before the season, that if the Lakers played the Celtics in the finals and won, that he should retire.
That'd be a pretty cold walk off.
Because there has like LA fans and just like LA locals in general, from what I have seen as someone that lives in LA, still even post title have been very like arm's length away from LeBron. Like I think there's this weird like, I like Kobe, so I can't like embrace the best player on my own team, which is super stupid. But I think at least for old heads that are Lakers fans, if LeBron led the Lakers to a victory over the Celtics, he would win over a large swath of that fan base.
I fucking hope so.
It's crazy that he hasn't won over a swath of the fan base. He saved them from like poverty franchise status and won a fucking championship.
I know they missed the playoffs like 8 years in a row before LeBron came.
So stupid, dude.
Hey, you don't have to convince me to hate Lakers fans. They're the worst.
All right. We're getting off track here. Thank you guys for listening to the Foul Trouble podcast. We'll catch you on Thursday this week. We might miss the episode. I'm going to be traveling every single day this week. And we've had some bad luck with hotel Wi-Fi. I don't know. For some reason, every time I load it up, max is just like one or two pixels. But
yeah. We become 8-bit. But
we'll let you guys know, and we'll catch you at the latest on Monday next week. Peace.